I was typing a funny letter. I thought we could begin our day with that joke. Dated 6-6-35. So one sadhak has asked Sri Aurobindo whether bluffing under appropriate conditions is all right for a sadhak. Sri Aurobindo notes that to be like that is always improper for a sadhak. Then the next day, obviously it is an explanation. I think it was, the question must have been asked by somebody who was doing purchases for vegetables and things like that in the local market. So they always quote high rates, so one bargains. So in the process of bargaining, he wanted a certain freedom to be given to him to say that somebody else is giving lesser rate or whatever it is. So the question is, regarding a lie being spoken by a sadhak when he has to deal with dishonest people, Sri Aurobindo writes, because one is dealing with dishonest people, that does not justify one in going down to their level. If you think that the prices are too high, or simply if you want them to be lower, you can say so and ask for a reduction. But it is not right to support your demand by a false statement. No one is bound to speak the truth when it would be harmful, or to speak whatever is in one's mind. It is always permissible to keep silence or evade a reply and not to say what one does not wish or think it right to tell. But to tell a lie is superfluous and not justifiable. It is usually out of weakness, moral and mental, that people lie. Those who are strong in nature do not need to lie. A sadhak has to be strong and not weak, straightforward when necessary, silent when necessary, but not a liar. Straightforwardness does not mean, of course, that one has to babble out everything to everybody. To keep a thing to oneself, not to tell what should not be told, is very necessary. But falsehood is not the right way to conceal things that have not to be told. The right way is silence.
Long ago I read regarding Gandhi, Sri Aurobindo in some letter which I read long ago, said Gandhi was an extremist because Gandhi supposedly maintained that you must tell the truth at all times of every condition and all conditions. Sri Aurobindo called that extremism. And then what he said is, with regard to the enemy, with regard to the enemy, my impression was that you don't have to tell the truth, but I didn't know whether he meant to the extreme of saying with regard to the enemy, this point I'm not clear, but I don't remember, whether you were allowed to deceive the enemy, but I'm not sure, I was allowed to tell. But to tell the truth, I know you call them an extremist on that account, you know, because you don't have to be the enemy, but I don't know if he also could have.
But Gandhi experimented with truth. But he could withhold truth very well. He did withhold the full truth many times. I don't think. Sri Aurobindo must have called him an extremist because of his emphasis on non-violence. No, even truth, the Gandhian brand of truth is different from the truth that we are talking about. You see.
when he had lied or done something normally considered more unethical. And Srila Vinny was asked about that. Srila Vinny said, when the being is intervening, being.
No, it is not telling a lie. No, you see, there is a code of chivalry among the warriors, just as in boxing. You never hit below the belt, literally. Understand? So, when the thing was going against him, between Wali, the chief of the monkeys, monkey tribes, he had, I think, deposed his brother? No. Only stolen his brother's wife. Stolen his brother's wife. And he was living on what we humans would call immoral life. And his brother was the person who was to help Rama to recover his wife, Sita, who was carried away by the Ravana, Rakshasa. So at that time there was a battle. So in the battle, that man, Wali, he looked like winning. So at that time Rama shot an arrow at his leg. That is at any rate below the thing that is permissible. Now, there has been a great controversy over it, that Rama is not an ideal man because he did like this. There are so many charges against him. One of them is that he did not observe the code of warriors. He was unfair, he cheated his enemy. Then it is there Sri Aurobindo says, when you are dealing with infra-human, infra-ethical elements, it may be necessary to adopt infra-ethical means. There is no question of telling a truth or lie. Rama has never told, he is the only avatar, I suppose, who has never told a lie. Krishna has told and they have said it is just is in jest or it is in play and all that. But poor Rama has never told.
And then there was that famous question also, which is when somebody asked him, why he changed his name in coming here. You remember, I said, you speaking, I was a politician.
Yes, he said, I was not a spiritual man at that time. I was a politician. And I did the ruse of a politician. It's true. He declared, he gave a different name. Jyoti Mitter or something, when he left Calcutta.
Christ also gave an indication when he said, be wise as servants.
I see.
What do you think?
Could be.
I'm not trying to philosophy. It's a good part of ethics.
I couldn't follow. Yes, you are right. The law is different in the animal kingdom, among the humans, among the superhumans. You can't expect, for instance, the animals, even the best animal, to subscribe to our code of law. Sri Aurobindo discusses it in Life Divine, that we don't blame a tiger because it kills. It is its dharma. But if a man were to do it, it would be different. Perhaps if a God does it, you can't question. Because he would be doing it for purposes of divine work. We know only stories. You follow me? So you have to take them, all of them, with a pinch of salt and not take them too literally and try to justify this way or give marks. Actually what happened, we do not know. So, the stories that are there, we say. Whether what actually they said, what was the purpose, what was the background, we do not know. Shorn out of context, anything can prove anything. Now, to come to our subject. Faith and Shakti. We have so far spoken of perfection in its three limbs. The perfection of the instrumental being, the mind, the mental intelligence, the heart and its emotions, the vital energies, and the physical body. Perfection of the soul powers, the four powers of which we have spoken, and perfection of surrender to the divine power, the divine Shakti. Now all these movements, necessary movements towards perfection, are not possible without a supporting faith. And what is faith? Faith is an ascent of the being to a truth, to an ideal, to an idea, to something which it wants to reach, to realize, to embody. Elsewhere, Sri Aurobindo describes faith as the soul's witness to a truth which is yet to gain acceptance by the external being. But the soul has perceived, the inner being has perceived, and that knowledge of the inner being communicates itself to the surface being as faith. Faith is a natural, a spontaneous conviction that this is so and this is not so. Now this ascent of the whole being is indispensable in the path of perfection. Faith in what? First, faith in the divine. Faith, there is a divine intelligence, there is a divine reality that is manifesting, that exists, and that is expressing itself. Faith in the Shakti, the power of the divine to effectuate its will, to work out the manifestation. So these, faith in these two, is capital. If we do not have faith in the divine or in the divine power, which are the home of perfection, which are the supreme powers of perfection, we cannot tread the path. But that is not enough. To have faith in the divine reality or the divine Lord and the Divine Mother, the Shakti, is not enough. One must have faith in one's own capacity to tread the path, to stick to the path. It is easy enough to be attracted to a path like this, but to stick it out, one cannot do unless one has faith that it is worthwhile stretching oneself, exerting oneself, because the goal is sure to be reached one day. And the enemy of faith is doubt. Wherever we have faith, we have confidence, the mind also opposes a doubt, supposing it is not so. Supposing it is otherwise, you are unnerved. The whole nervous being sinks. At any rate, in the first experience of doubt, attack on faith is this, that however strong the faith, for a moment, you tend to falter. Because the possibility is shown with such vividness that it could be that the faith is moonshine, is misplaced. It is somebody has said and we blindly believe, or it may be a wrong perception. Supposing it was not so, is it wise to tie up ourselves with this project? Now this faith can be an honest doubt. It can also be a mischief of the hostiles, of the anti-divine forces, which want to create division and delay, if not prevent you from advancing on your path. This said, it does not mean that all doubts are wrong, and this is the danger. If we take it that all doubt is wrong, there is no problem. But the trouble is that some doubts are legitimate. Not doubts regarding the fundamentals of faith, like faith in the divine, faith in the rightness of the path and all this. Not even faith in our capacity, because once we choose a path, it means we are chosen for it. And doubt can't apply there. Doubt has a certain legitimacy where half-truths are concerned, halfway measures and halfway stations are concerned. The path is long, the journey is long, and perfection is not achieved in a day. The whole course of evolution, spiritual evolution, proceeds from ignorance to less ignorance, from half-light to more light, from light to greater light. In the process, many things change. Ideas, opinions, convictions, which are valid for me today, they become out of date day after tomorrow, because I have traveled, I have grown into a newer consciousness, and those old thoughts, ideas, which suited then, do not suit anymore. It is there, when the doubt comes, that it is legitimate. It may have been true then, is it true today? A man lives worldly life, has a family, he has his duties, he has responsibilities to his children, to his wife, to his parents. At any rate, as long as the present social setup lasts. But he receives a call. He takes to the spiritual path, but he is obsessed, he is troubled by those loyalties. Then a doubt can very well come that those loyalties do not apply to you anymore, because you are no more a member of that family. You are an aspirant, you are a seeker, to whom the whole truth is the divine, and not truths of the family, truths of blood relations. That way, doubt plays a useful role in growth, in discarding values that are no more relevant, that have become out of date, This applies to not only intellectual and mental ideas, but even in spiritual matters. There are experiences and experiences. No one experience can be treated as a whole, shutting out all other possible experiences. And then there is the load of superstitions, wrong formulations that have encrusted the past traditions. There are also no liberation from that ignorance and wrong belief would be possible unless rational doubts were permitted and allowed to play their role. This is the use of doubt. You can take it that everything in God's creation has a purpose, has a use. Things become misfit, dangerous, only when they outlive their utility and seek to poach in domains which are not their legitimate concerns. In this faith, faith in the possibility of perfection, it is inevitable that a number of minor faiths crumble down. Faith in colleagues possible, faith in mental reconciliations, compromises, acceptance of certain standards as necessary for the nuns and so on. But the divine Shakti that works strikes down these several faiths in order to create the path for new faiths to take their place. Left to himself, man would be a prisoner of his smaller, more convenient faiths. He would not care to grow. But when the time comes, when old faiths become jailers, become a jail, a prison house, then the divine Shakti in whom one has trust, it strikes. One feels in a wilderness, having lost the old moorings, old supports, till new ones take their place. One is at sea. This happens in the life of almost every seeker. And these are the periods of confusion of what the older masters call the periods of test. But as long as you have the basic faith in perfection, the basic faith in the Shakti, you stand it. You know, this is an inevitable process, that things had to happen. These smaller faiths, incomplete faiths, imperfect faiths had to go so that more perfect faiths, more whole faiths could take their place. Then one has to have faith that one is the influence from the spirit, the impartial spirit, the unembodied spirit is active for the liberation and the perfection of man. There is a grace, there is a compassion, there is a helping consciousness. One has to have that faith. And this influence goes on acting as a leavening agent in the strife and stress of life. One may succumb to temptations. One may take the wrong path even under honest belief. One may fall. But One can always be sure of standing up again as long as one has deep faith in the reality of the path and of the certainty of reaching the goal. To analyze individually, the faith in the principles, the principle of liberation, the principle of perfection, the principle of spiritual evolution, one must have that faith. Once you have it, you accept all the consequences. If you feel, or if you have a doubt that this world may after all be an illusion, and perfection and all this talk is just speculation, then one may succumb any moment without redemption, at any rate in the present life. That cardinal faith in the basic objectives and the possibility of realizing these objectives in this life must be there firmly embedded. Faith in the principle. The next, faith in our power to achieve. Achieve, not only at the end, but even here, what Sri Aurobindo calls a working faith. I may be imperfect, my knowledge may be incomplete, I may be a weakling, but still, I have certain circumstances helping me, I have the guidance given to me, assured to me, I have the teacher, I have the field. Well, I exert myself. And to the extent I exert myself, even if I commit mistakes, I will be seen through. This kind of working faith, one need not try to justify it from A to Z, but a working, practical faith is enough to start and get a long way. And in the growth of this faith, it is necessary. Sri Aurobindo gives a warning that one must not erect certain premature certitudes that this is true and that all the else is not. This clinging to our mental formations that this must be true, equality, the spiritual guide must be equal to all, physically equal to all, externally equal to all, it is not enough to be equal inside, equality. And there are similar old world ideas or samskaras, associations. Now these shall not be taken as final. As we grow, as we evolve, we see that truths which apply in one sphere do not necessarily apply in other spheres, and the Shakti strikes them down without mercy. So one must always keep a certain plasticity. When a faith is proved wrong, one has to just discard it. But mind you, these are all incidental faiths, incidental compromises, acceptances within certain frameworks. When the framework changes, your beliefs, your faiths also have to enlarge themselves, modify themselves. So Sri Aurobindo gives a warning, do not have any premature certitudes, and even if you have the faith in the Shakti that what is premature will be removed, and what is permanent will one day take their place. Recognize also that there is always a possibility of error. Till the last shreds of ignorance are removed, last shade of ignorance is dispelled, no one can be sure that he is always right. There is always the possibility of error. Never be cocksure that you are right and others are wrong. Never feel that you can do no wrong. One never knows that because we are not of one part. The enlightenment that the mind has, the enlightenment that the heart has, may not be active, may not be there in the vital or in the physical mind, for instance. So it is just possible under our very nose, things may be going wrong. So this possibility of error is a must that should be recognized. It is usually the ego which asserts, I can do no wrong. That can never be so. Till one is completely transformed down to the last self, and the supramental consciousness suffuses your being, you cannot say that all your movements are only movements of truth. There is always a possibility of mixture, possibility of error. And these possibilities of error are well recognized in spiritual life. They can take place on any level, to start with the intelligence, the level of mind, our beliefs, our philosophies, our placings of things in life. At a certain level of understanding, they are true. But as the understanding grows, widens, we may have to modify them. These are what are called the steps of Shakti. As the Yoga Shakti develops in you, as the workings of the higher Shakti expand and take root in you, these possibilities are thrown before you again and again, emphasizing the necessity to change your rigid stance, have certain plasticities in your mental makeup. Similarly, the ascent of the heart and life to these steps of Shakti, to these incidental and necessary changes of poise, necessary changes of perspectives, they are indispensable. Not only the mind, but the heart and life also are so much involved in certain faiths, in certain workings, in certain experiences, that they cling to them as the very guarantee of truth. Maybe, but it is a lesser truth one day we realize. Greater truths take their place, and it is time that the heart and the life just let them go without pain, without regret. So mind, heart, life, all these shall not cherish any such thing as the final truths. There are truths and truths, formations and formations, which are best described as steps of the growing Shakti. And steps have to be free. Then there has to be the ascent of the soul, ascent of the mind, ascent of the heart and life, ascent of the soul. Because even in matters which pertain to the soul, which are necessary, that are necessarily purer, there is always an intrusion of occult experience, psychic, what they call in the West psychic experiences, we call occult experiences. They need not have anything to do with the soul, but they interfere with spiritual life, with spiritual experiences. And a time does come when the sadhak has to choose the spiritual and relegate the occult to the background. Even in the spiritual experiences, there are various types of experience. It will not do to accept any one experience as total or final. Each experience, however great, if only we have the faith, are open and receptive, prepares for a still greater experience. Many of the traditionalists did the mistake of accepting one capital experience as the final, and were in a hurry to formulate it in mental terms, erect philosophy, taking it as the sole truth of the spiritual life or the destiny of man. Today, however, we cannot afford to take these limited views, and each spiritual experience is to be taken as valid in its place, but it cannot shut out other possible spiritual experiences. If my spiritual experience is great for me, I should have the spiritual humility to recognize that the experience that you have is equally great for you, and who knows, one day I may find it to be greater than my own for myself. So this gradation of spiritual experiences is very important, and the soul's faith shall not be shaken or break down when this truth is revealed to the soul. Faith has to be enlarging, comprehensive, accommodating to new experiences, new realizations. It has to be itself enlarging. And apart from these individual ascents, faiths, there has to be the ascent of the whole being, the entire being, to the presence and the guidance of God and His Shakti. Unless there is this overall faith that I am in their hands, my life is being guided by them, that is the basic background on which all other faiths thrive and can grow. It is inevitable that to talk of these changes, replacement of smaller experiences or faiths by bigger ones, there should be no self-distrust. It is impermissible to have lack of faith in one's own discrimination and capacity. To have constant self-distrust, constantly putting one's finger, this is my defect, that is my defect, I will never go forward, my faith may not be correct, this is an extreme. The opposite is the rajasic pride. I have the truth, I have the experience. Anything else is less and inferior. So an ideal sadhak, an ideal seeker, has to be free from either of them. Constant self-distrust on one side and an offensive spiritual pride on the other. One must know, one must realize that the power that affects is he. It is not possible for the puny human power with which one is endowed to negotiate all these corners, to tread the path all alone. It is his power that guides, it is his power that shows, it is his power that lifts us and puts us across when there are difficult channels. And finally, one must have the faith and the vision to see that whatever the field of life, nothing is impossible to the Shakti, the divine power, which Sri Aurobindo again describes here as the fourfold manifestation of the divine Shakti. The Shakti effectuating the divine will in realm of knowledge, light, enlightenment, in the realm of power, strength, in the realm of beauty, wealth in the realm of work and continuous perfection. And this is possible for the Shakti, because behind the Shakti is one who wields the Shakti. He is the Ishvara. As Sri Aurobindo has described in Life Divine, the Shakti is himself as the Shakti. The Lord himself, in the poise of action, dynamic action, he is the Shakti. They are not two different things. Himself the Lord and himself the Shakti. There is one will at work in the universe, and it is the work, will of the Supreme Lord. This is the climax of faith, when one sees in every movement and every moment the working of the Supreme Will through so many instrumentations. The prime one is the Divine Shakti. That is the last word in faith.
Consists of having all the realizations one after the other, including nirvana, which I think even Savitri experiences. How does one re-emerge from extinction in the integral yoga when one through all the experiences?
Extinction comes only when you pursue the path of nirvana exclusively to its end. But in this yoga, you take that experience, have that realization of silence and immobility, and aspire for the dynamic element of the Divine from that foundation. You don't move towards the extreme of that nirvana path, even as you do not always engage yourself in the extreme of the path of dynamic work, but always take care to maintain touch with the immutable self, with the silence. So throughout there is an integrated approach, not a one-sided exclusive thrust. The ancients, those who spoke of extinction, they found it very tempting to leave the problem to others. They even convinced themselves that there is really no problem. It is only as long as we are in that flux we feel a problem. So they were in a hurry to catch the flood and go to the emergence, extinction. But here one does not pursue that way. One takes the experience or realization of nirvana for what it is worth and what it is intended to give in the perfection of life, makes it an element of perfection.
When we enjoy the nice view, we have a monopoly of truth. But yet we here and many others who just somehow know that what another person has said is the last word on truth, even though it's not the final word, because it's infinite. What happens to you? I'm not saying, I know it's not to argue with people or convert people, but yet in feeling, we're enjoying that view. We have a monopoly, but yet we know the last word.
There can't be a last word in these matters. Because Sri Aurobindo himself has said that this is the immediate ideal. This is the immediate goal. Beyond, there may be, and he says certainly, there are other vistas opening, but it is not for the present cycle. There are. Truth is infinite. The being is infinite. So nobody can have a monopoly. One can only claim to be comprehensive and keep the doors open.
How may it look like when there
above the supermind, just such as Ananda and then the Absolute.
Hmm.
I mean, how what vistas are that
vistas
of which you are talking? If there is above the supermind only.
Yes, the vistas of Ananda, the vistas of Chit, vistas of Sat, nobody has analyzed them. Those themselves are endless. We are just clubbing them together, Satchidananda. Because unless the human mind, the soul consciousness, realizes completely the supramental realm, you can't have an idea of what is beyond. It is only mentally formulated in a block.